You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 421, The Superboy Chronicles, Clark Kent, Reluctant Hero of Smallville. And welcome to episode 421 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I am Paul French, and today I am holding down the HQ on his own, lad. Just trying for some alliteration there. I'm not sure I entirely succeeded. At any rate, as you know, Darren and I have said we've got both got a whole lot of stuff going on, and Darren just moved recently, and unfortunately, he is without internet, which is like, I don't know. He's camping, basically. He's camping. That's what's happening. So with that in mind, he was hoping it would be ready for this weekend. It was not. So here's what we're doing instead. So I'm going to take a look at the next issue of Superboy and hoping that in the next week we will be able to get together to record some more Magic Boar stuff, because I really want to kind of get to that. It's been a long time since I've read it, so I'm kind of enjoying going through it again. The last time I read it was maybe about a year into 5 years later. So it has been a damn while. So anyway, on the side of Legion news, the one thing I can think of is, of course, we've had Mon-El on Supergirl. Now, I don't think I'm getting too spoily with this, but one of the things is, you know, they've talked about how, you know, Daxam and Krypton, they didn't get along so well. They were apparently in the same star system in the TV show continuity. And not so crazy about one another, the Daxamites and the Kryptonians. And I find it interesting that, of course, now, he's just introduced himself as Mon-El. We haven't got into whether or not his name is Largand at all. The one thing is, though, they are talking about designing a costume for him. You know, Wynn was talking about how he, you know, designed the Supergirl costume and coming up with a name for the new hero. So wait, it might not be Mon-El. Interesting. So now we try and see if maybe they go with Valor. Who knows? So anyway, that's kind of what's going on there. But what was interesting in this last episode, they had the whole thing with the Alien Fight Club, and we got to see Draga. Spoilers. Although I'm not telling you anything that actually happened. So we got to see this version of Draga. And very much like the War World stuff in Superman, when you get down to it, although it's, you know, JSA villain roulette in there. Other stuff going on, and I'm not going to spoil any of the actual plot points of the episode. However, in the background at the bar, which is, you know, kind of the front room of where these fight clubby things are going on, we saw a lot of Interlac. And one of them actually was the name of the production designer. You know, it literally said designed by, not, I say literally, poor use of the word literally. It said design by so-and-so. And I can't remember, it's Tom something or other, who is the production designer on Flash and Supergirl. So anyway, that's as close as we get to Legion news, but I like the idea that we're seeing Interlac in the background on the shows. Because the more stuff that we see in the background of stuff, the more likelihood there is for stuff to come to the foreground. Also, in follow-up to the Saturn Girl showing up in Batman number 9 thing, maybe there should be a drinking game rule with it. Every time I make a Beatles reference, you have to take a drink. At any rate. So the Saturn Girl thing, in Batman. I also understand that there was some sort of Saturn Girl reference made by Superman. And I just learned this, actually. Someone had posted, our friend Caleb had posted to the, Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, that, you know, he was saying, well, like, why haven't they made any mention of this whole Saturn Girl thing? And I mentioned the Batman number 9 thing, and he hadn't seen that. So that was great. But then, our other friend, Chris Mosby, AKA Computo. Well, not really Computo, but you know, He pointed out that there had been some sort of reference, and it's just kind of a passing reference in either Superman or action. So I'm going to ask him to look into that for us, because I would be interested to see what's going on as far as different mentions of the Legionnaires. And as Darren and I were talking about the other week, Arkham is a home for the criminally, an asylum for the criminally insane. So I'm wondering what it is Saturn Girl did that landed her in that interrogation room in the first place. Seems to, again, that there is more than meets the eye. All right, so I'm going to get to this Superboy issue. And as I say, I hope that we'll get back to the Magic Wars in the next week or so. If we end up getting delayed again, I might actually do a who's who in the Legion, just so we have some, you know, Superboy's a Legionnaire always. So always deserves, reference in this show, and always will get reference in this show. But I understand that people, you know, really they're tuning in for OG Legion action or other versions of the Legion. Anyway, so this one is issue number 12 of New Adventures of Superboy, and the cover date is December of 1980. And on the cover, we have Superboy standing around where there's a big crowd cheering, and the billboard that says, "Welcome to Smallville, home of Superboy and Clark Kent." And it's actually got them both sort of on either side of the sign. And so Superboy is standing there watching this crowd looking at the billboard, and he's thinking to himself, "When I did a super feat as Clark Kent, I made the biggest mistake of my life. Now I'll have to leave Smallville and adopt a new identity in another town." And the 8 extra exciting pages, as it says at the top of the page, and this is on a cover that is, of course, by Schaffenberger and Kurt Schaffenberger and Dave Hunt. Special added attraction, Superboy's secret diary. All right, so on the splash page, we have a poster of Superboy up where he's been crossed out in paint. And the mayor is saying, "My good friends of Smallville, you need no longer fawn over Superboy and his flashy superhuman feats, for I'm about to introduce you to the true hero of your community. Yes, folks, I mean your friend and mine, Clark Kent." And he's holding up his hand as though Clark has just won a boxing match. "Smallville, USA." This makes me think of Rod Serling. "Smallville, USA. Once an undistinguished little town, not unlike hundreds of others across the country, until it became world-renowned as the home of the amazing Superboy from Krypton. Now, wonder of wonders, Smallville is about to gain even greater prominence with the unveiling of Clark Kent, reluctant hero of the Twilight Zone." No, sorry, Smallville. All right, so this one is brought to us by writer Carrie Bates, penciler Kurt Schaffenberger, inker Dave Hunt, letterer Ben Oda, colorist Jerry Serpy, and editor Julius Schwartz. All right, so we start off with the Smallville High class. They had a Botany 101 class. I didn't have a botany course when I was in high school. I'm certain of this. Anyway, so they are looking for flowers in the angiosperm group, characterized by having the seeds enclosed in an ovary. I guess the code would actually allow them to say the word ovary. That's good. She said, "You have 30 minutes before we return to the bus." And so Lana Lang is in there, and she says she's found something. Clark, where did he go? And it turns out that Clark is wearing his, he's just changing back from Superboy to Clark. He says, "Hope no one missed me while I slipped away to straighten that tottering bridge. I must have set a new Superboy record changing back and forth. Great guns, that sounded like another job for Superboy." And he's moving, and there's a car that's driving off the cliff, falling through, crashed through the guardrails. And he says, "That classic vintage rolls, about to skid off that cliff." So this is interesting because, you know, we've talked about for years, they kept, you know, we lived in an era, guys like me grew up in an era where Superboy actually kind of aged in parallel. So the idea being that if Superman is permanently 29 and Superboy is forever 16, then it would basically be 13 years before. So in this case, these adventures would have taken place in 1967. Before that, Superboy had been stuck in the 30s forever. And you'll notice this even in sort of 60s and even in some early 70s stories where Superboy would be there and in the background you'd see very, very old cars. That was probably more a Weisinger thing. I'm going to guess that that's when he left, that's when it changed. At any rate, so Clark sees this car about to go off the cliff, and he goes, I guess I've got to go through my super speed costume switch again. Or do I? Seems like such a waste of time and effort, especially since I've been treating my Clark clothes with special chemicals that withstand the heat of super speed air friction. And he says, I'll do this rescue bit so fast, no one will be able to see me, and it'll save me the bother of switching identities. So he runs over and he pulls the car back. And the driver of the car is shocked. And he's like, how did I get back here? And that mudslick should have sent me my rolls, riding to certain doom below. Not that I'm complaining, it's just that P.J. Huxley doesn't believe in out-and-out miracles. So the question becomes how, or who, or what do I thank for saving my life? So he looks and he sees a footprint. He says, amazing, absolutely amazing. So the next day, or later that day, it's dinner time at the Kent home, and Clark is explaining to Mom and Pa what went on that day. And he goes, oh, as soon as I found that the driver was okay, I casually wandered back to the rest of the class, et cetera, et cetera. And he basically told them, you know, hey, got separated and lost because, you know, he's Clark. He says it was so convincing that even Snoopy Lana fell for the routine, especially since I took the precaution of bringing back a hibiscus palustris specimen that I spotted with my supervision. And Jonathan says, a what? And she goes, and Martha says, a flower, Jonathan. And they say, but Clark, isn't there part of the story you left out where you changed clothes and sprang into action? And he goes, well, no, I told her as it was. And so Mom and Pa are just like shocked that he actually did a super stunt without switching to his uniform first. He said, there's nothing to worry about. I was in super speed motion the whole time. There's no way that driver or anyone else could have even had the faintest glimpse of Clark Kent on the scene. See, well, that's not the point. The point is you got to switch to the uniform. You know, if nothing else, just for branding, really. Well, you know, they don't go for that. But anyway, he says, I know, the more familiar and routine the process becomes, the easier and faster it'll be to make the super speed switch from Clark to Superboy without thinking. So it'll become an automatic reflex. Yes, I was wrong. I took an unnecessary risk performing a super stunt out of uniform. I promise never to do it again, he says, with one hand raised. So the next day, there's a plane that's falling out of the sky, and Superboy catches up to it, and he sees it, and he basically causes a super speed updraft to allow them to pull out of the dive, and sure enough, that's exactly what they do. And they say, "Oh, I guess he's probably got another emergency to handle. I wish I could have thanked him." Ah, for what? Superboy must save hundreds of people every week. He was only doing his job. He says, I overheard that. Talk about gratitude. It takes all types. So later they're at the school and Clark gets called to the office and there's P.J. Huxley. And he says, I want to first congratulate you on your heroism. I know you've seen this gentleman before, but you've never been formally introduced. And so it turns out that Huxley is a famous millionaire industrialist. Yes. And and he says, my X-ray vision has just confirmed why I suddenly have that sinking feeling. He goes, how do you do, Mr. Huxley? Principal Danforth seems to think you and I have met somewhere before. He goes, oh, come on, you know, I want to shout out to the world what you did for me. And he goes, are you sure you have the right fellow, sir? Not a lookalike? He says, somehow I don't think I'm going to talk him out of this. He says, you're the one, all right. And he says that they telescopically checked out the shoes of every male student entering Smallville High, and it turns out the print, of which he's made a plaster cast, the print was made by his shoe. So he says, I'm boxed in here with no way out but one. He says, "You win, Mr. Huxley. What you suspect is absolutely true. I did save your life yesterday, but don't ask me to explain how." And it turns out, he says, "I ran to your skidding car without thinking." And you know, he basically goes with the whole mother lifting the tree off the baby thing, you know, the super adrenaline rush. And that's what's making it happens. And he says, "In other words, any of us is capable of becoming a superhero under the right circumstances. But the point is, my boy, you were the superhero who came along in time to save this grateful geezer's life. And I'm about to demonstrate just how grateful." So, he writes him a check for $1 million. Well, Pa is incensed about this. Later that day, he is explaining it to Pa at the Kent General Store, and he says, "Please, Pa, not so loud. They'll hear you clear across the street. You and Ma taught me never to accept rewards for good deeds as Superboy or Clark. I told him to donate the million to local charities." He says, "And he did just that?" He says, "Oh, yes. But it's what he said afterwards that bothers me. His exact words were, 'You haven't heard the last of me, Clark Kent. I'll repay you for your courage if it's the last thing I ever do.'" And so it turns out Ma calls him into the TV, the living room, and there he is talking about how Clark had asked him to donate the money and how he's done just that. And they're talking about Clark on TV, and they've got an image of him up behind the whole bit. And he talks about how, yeah, this meek, mild-mannered teenager chose to save me and risk his life despite being a total stranger. He says, "If by chance Superboy had flying by at the time, he would have recognized me, or he would have rescued me. But at what risk? None. Superboy's wondrous powers make him immune to danger and harm. So of the two, who is the greatest hero?" So he says that he thinks that that Clark is a million times the hero that Superboy is. And poor Pa Kent, he just kind of does the face palm. He's like, "Jehoshaphat, this is terrible. He's telling thousands of people in this area that Clark Kent is a true superhero. The whole idea behind his secret identity is to maintain a low profile, keep out of the public eye, not be played up on the 6 o'clock news." And Julius Schwartz, of course, can't resist saying that, ironically, that's exactly where Clark will end up as a TV anchor years in the future. Anyway, so he tells him, you know, calm down. And we go back and we see them talking to PJ Huxley, and then someone throws a can of cola through the TV screen, and it turns out it's this Devon who was the pilot of that plane. And he says, "We're ruined. And all you can think about is a lousy picture tube." And she says, what are you going on about, Devon? Didn't you hear the Kent kid turned down the $1 million? He says, "You don't know my Uncle Paul." PJ Huxley's nephew here. "He's as stubborn as he is sentimental. He's got his mind set on repaying that jerk, right? So how long do you suppose it'll take Unc to figure out that the easiest way is to reward Kent without the brat even knowing about it?" And he says, "I'll tell you, by making him the new heir in his will." So he's freaking out about this. So basically, he says, you know, "I've got to come up with a plan." And he says, "After all, Clark Kent can't become a beneficiary if he's not alive to receive it." So the next day, PJ Huxley is in a phone booth, doing some business. And he says, "You know, blasted well what I want from you people. Can't be furnished overnight, Simmons. Just tell me when I can expect results." And they say, "Well, with any luck, Mr. Huxley, this time tomorrow." Then everybody starts rushing around, and it turns out there's Superboy. And he says, "Golly, whenever Superboy comes flying through the sky, I can't help gaping like a kid at the circus, watching the excitement." And they're like, "It's just Superboy off on another mission. Let's get on with our shopping." You know, because they're kind of jaded in Smallville now. And so, so some of them watch, and the others just take him for granted and kind of go on about their business. And so his routine mission is rescuing a flaming dirigible. And so he saves it, and, you know, everyone's applauding Superboy, and Huxley's sitting there, "What's with you people? Why do you applaud fellow hero who, he says, "What's wrong with you people? Why do you applaud a fellow who plays his superhero role with no risk to life or limb just because he was lucky enough to be endowed with superpowers, and ignore someone in your midst who defies danger to save lives?" And he says, "Real self-made hero, Clark Kent." We have some guys walking by, and one guy says, Clark Kent? Our Clark Kent? And another woman says, Martha Kent's timid son. Heavens, no, that boy could be toppled over by a good wind. So that evening, Lana's saying, so remember, Clark, if any other girl asks you, you're coming to the autumn frolic with me. Ah, see? Clark is getting rewarded for his good deeds. And he says, oh, sure, Lana, if you say so. I have to get off the phone now. We're expecting a call from Aunt Mary tonight. And he says, whew, three girls did ask me the dance, and I had to come up with three excuses to say no. And Jonathan says, you did the right thing, son, by agreeing to go with Lana. You'll have an easier time turning your other admirers down. So he says, you know, that Superboy, it was always a snap for me to handle popularity and hero worship, but as Clark Kent, all this adulation is just too much. And they say, yeah, it'll pass. All you can do is wait it out. And it's like, yeah, it's going to be over in like another, what, six, seven pages. So he goes up and he thanks his parents for, despite all this, not saying, I told you so. So Devin and his girlfriend come in and they basically kidnap Clark. And he's, of course, pretending to, you know, to go along with it so that he doesn't give away his identity. And they put him in a big burlap bag and throw him into a sinkhole. And he says, yeah, so when Kent's mysteriously missing and never to be found again, Uncle Paul will make me the sole heir. We'll see about that. Anyway, so they throw Clark in, and then there's a rumbling noise and a bit of a hurricane. And then we see Superboy saving the apparently sacked Clark Kent. And he's whipped up sort of a land whirlpool, and he basically gathers up Devin and his girl, and Maureen is her name. And he says, naturally, I was paying possum from the instant I heard Devin and Maureen climbing up toward my bedroom. But I already learned my lesson about flaunting any heroics as Clark Kent, which is why I waited until I was underground and out of sight before switching to Superboy. And filling this gunny sack with enough dirt to make it look like Clark Kent is still inside. So, yeah, so basically, he says to, he sees Mr. Huxley at the train. He says, I understand why you look so glum, Mr. Huxley. Finding out your nephew resorted to attempted murder in order to inherit your money. And he says, actually, I suppose I should be relieved because Mr. Simmons here has just informed me, Devin is no blood relative of mine. Says, I'm a genealogist hired by Mr. Huxley to trace his family tree, but our research uncovered the fact that Devin was secretly adopted. In other words, he was an orphan, which means I don't have even one blood relative to leave my fortune to, and you, Clark, have already turned it down. Says, I have a suggestion, Mr. Huxley. Why not bequeath your money to various orphanages throughout the country? That way you'll be helping many sons, daughters, nephews, and nieces, not just one. He says, great idea. I can envision it now. After I pass on, scores of orphanages will be receiving grants from the P.J. Huxley Clark Kent Fund. It says, any objections, Clark? And he says, not a one, Mr. Huxley. And he thinks to himself, considering I'm an orphan from Krypton, what could be more appropriate? So there we go. And I see a house ad here for, it's got an image of Advent of Action Comics number 514. And so the extra 8 pages was actually devoted to the Atom and Airwave. All right, so there we go. So let's just move into the next story. And this is the Superboy's secret diary, and it is the day of the alien scoop. It is by E. Nelson Bridwell writer Romeo Tangal, who most of you might realize is was the anchor on the George Perez New Teen Titans, at least for the first quite some time, actually. They were kind of the de facto art team, and I think Mike DiCarlo took over at some point in there. Kim DeMolder is the anchor, Albert de Guzman is the letterer, Jerry Serpy is the colorist, and Julius Schwartz is the editor. So we see the Kents watching TV, and this is earlier, so because we've got, of course, older Jonathan and Martha talking about the allegedly super powerful youth called Superboy. And they're like, what? You know, they said that this is purported to be a picture of the new sensation operating in Smallville. So this is early days for Superboy. And as we know from issue one of this series, he started being Superboy at 8 years old. And they say that the renowned stage magician, Indra the Incredible, claims that Superboy is an out-and-out fraud. Clark says, gosh, what would make him say such a thing? And Jonathan says, remember, Clark, you're unique. There's never been anyone like you on Earth. And so Martha says, let's hear what Indra's saying. He says, and I will prove my claim when I duplicate all Superboy's feats in my new stage act. And Clark is saying, it's not surprising that people would have all sorts of wild ideas about me. A self-styled witch claims I'm a warlock with magical powers. A science writer says I'm a mutant. A religious fanatic believes I was sent to herald the end of the world. A political columnist thinks I'm the product of a secret government experiment. And there's a psychiatrist who insists I'm a mass hallucination. And there must be so many theories about me, as many theories about me as about flying saucers, which is where a UFO watcher in Colorado says you came from. He's sure you're a Martian. Well, we know the Martians look completely different. Well, son, you must admit, he came closer than any of the others. And he goes, sure, there are light years difference between Mars and Krypton. Sometimes I feel like I should just reveal my origin openly. And they say, well, it'll have to come out sometime, Clark. And they're frightened to think about it because, you know, knowing that so many people hate others because of their skin color or ethnic origin, what will the reaction be to an alien from another planet? So now, let's just think back here. Again, if the adventures of Superboy at 16 are taking place in 1967, 8 years before that, so we're talking 1959 here. Very different, yeah. Well, I mean, like they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Anyway, so she says that's one reason that Clark Kent of Krypton is Clark, Kal-El of Krypton is Clark Kent of Earth. But when the time comes to reveal your origins, son, you'll have to pick someone trustworthy who will give only the facts without blowing them out of all proportion. Well, we already know who that's going to be. So he says, the thought wasn't new, but it seemed to grow more intense each day as I flew out on my regular patrol that night. And so we see him flying okay. There's a robbery, and he goes down to help out. There's a cop already there, and the guy says, Superboy, what luck to contact you so soon. And all this while he stops this truck, and of course it is Perry White, and he says, I didn't know about the truck danger when I summoned you. And so the whole idea is that he says, I was told that you fly over this spot at 11:35 every night, and which is the exact moment that the cop passes by on his beat. And he says, someone knew that and planted a death trap for him. And he says, what, you mean this driverless truck was deliberately sent toward me? And it turns out there's a little gadget in there and a bomb. And so, of course, it's a firebomb, so it would have destroyed itself and all the other evidence. And they couldn't find any identifiable prints. And so he says, 9 years ago, Officer Rowe, you arrested a burglar and expert mechanic named Harlow Bain. He was paroled last month. And he goes, right, but how do you know he was the guilty party? He says, because I went through the police files with my telescopic vision until I found a matching print. And he says, I've spotted my man at a tavern 4 blocks away, established an alibi, no doubt. And Perry says, great, Caesar's ghost. Heat vision, x-ray vision, telescopic vision, microscopic. Doesn't he ever run out of visions? And the cop says, I'll call headquarters for someone to lift that print and dismantle the bomb. Meanwhile, Superboy gets in there. He captures Harlow Bain, and he says, you ain't got nothing on me. I've been sitting here for the last 3 hours. And he says, I'm sure you have, after rigging a truck to kill the officer who captured you years ago. However, I stopped the truck in time, so the only charge is attempted murder. And since your bomb failed to go off, at the police have the evidence. He says, you ain't taking me in. And he tries to, take out Superboy with a wooden chair, as so many did. And he's like, wow, he really is tough. He didn't even bat an eyelash. And Superboy flies off with him, and he says, if only I had a gun, Superboy tells him. It wouldn't have done you any good either. Besides, I've got to add another charge. I'd have to add another charge, carrying a gun on parole. And so Perry says, hey, those amazing powers of yours make you better than the whole Metropolis Peace Force. How about mine answering me a few questions? And Superboy says, like what? And he goes, well, for one, how did you use your powers to apprehend that that crook? And so he basically tells him all this stuff. And he just thinks to himself, he says, is there anything you'd want me to keep off the record? And he goes, no, whatever I told you, you can publish. And that's when he gets an idea. You know, he says, you're sure there are no details that might endanger you? And he goes, no, sir, as far as I know, nothing can harm me. He says, exactly, as far as you know, but there might be something you don't know about. Yes. And they say, yes, you know, the editor's note from Julia Schwartz says, such as kryptonite and magic, which Superboy has not yet encountered. So he tells him, and he goes, hey, Mr. White, how would you like a really big scoop? Such as the truth about my origin. And he goes, great, Caesar's ghost. And that was only after a simple interview. And so, yeah, he says, breaking that story could put me in line for a Pulitzer. Which I did just learn this. Anyway, a professor at Ivy University theorized you might be a time traveler from the future. Is that Professor Potter? Is that the guy in the Atom who was like Ray Palmer's mentor? Anyway, others think you're everything from a robot to a demon. And he says they're all wrong. I came from a distant planet called Krypton just before it exploded. He kind of explains the whole thing. And and Superboy says he's concerned. He doesn't want people to think he's some kind of monster. And he goes, this might strike you as funny, but have you registered as a resident alien? And Superboy says that President Eisenhower ensured me I had nothing to worry about when I confided in him. After all, where could I be deported since Krypton no longer exists? And by morning, it had, of course, gotten around. And you know, there were people saying, huh, never much liked foreigners. Don't trust them. Someone else saying, what does it matter where he comes from as long as he's on the side of the law? And someone else saying, I don't believe a word of it. Nobody lives on other planets. A kid from another world, just like science fiction, come to life. And so they're watching it and says, and the president personally invited Superboy to a reception at the White House after Congress voted him a special citizenship. See, that shows how long ago this. Congress actually did something. And quickly, just saying. And they say, he says, it sure makes me feel proud. And they say, well, and she says, well, land sakes, you've been raised as American for over 6 years. And they say, that's true, Clark. Congress hasn't made you any more American than you were. Why, I heard say that the Indians came to America from Asia. If you go back far enough, we're all immigrants. You just happen to come from a little farther away. And then Superboy wrote in his diary at the end, I wonder, though, will I ever meet that reporter, Perry White, again? And, of course, we know that he would. And so that is issue 12 of The New Adventures of Superboy. And so I'm going to wrap this one up. Comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join in the conversation on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And in addition to all these things, you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, where you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble, and we will see you all next week.